quanto è quella lì?
No, perché it's my persona.
Oh, ok.
So it's cool kid.
Wish, yeah, right.
And then you put it in our and I want my feet. And it's still recording.
And also, we are still on the same page, so...
Good morning, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry? Yes, your honourable members, and that's ladies and gentlemen. Don't ask me where Christine fits in that. Debbie is being naughty. The purpose of this morning's meeting is to take up our discussions that began last week with the Public Protector on the remuneration and benefits of the Deputy Public Protector. Thus far we've received an apology from Advocate Nonkosi Cetshwayo, but Advocate Zweni is here and he's more than capable. Welcome. I see we also have an apology from Prof. Ndabandaba, the Honorable Sheila Stole, Mr. Amrosini and Mr. Kwes Fanimero. It seems your efforts are bearing fruit, honorable members. All right. Honorable members, where should we begin? Mr. Jeffrey?
I mean, basically, we have a submission from the Public Protector, which wants the salary of the Deputy Public Protector reviewed. First submission is to consider aligning it with the conditions of service and service benefits of the Public Protector, with a provision that such remuneration shall not be less than that of the Judge of the High Court, directly below the grade and salary level applicable to the Public Protector in terms of the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers Act, which effectively, I think, is asking for it to be at the level of the Deputy Judge President, and then consider such measures as it may deem fit to address past discrepancies in the conditions of service and service benefits which might have caused financial prejudice to the current Deputy Public Protector. And that's basically what the first submission was, and then the supplementary submission was also dealt with other benefits, leave, but compared to judges she wasn't getting enough leave, and compared to the Public Protector, the motor vehicle scheme, she wanted the settlement and transport and subsistence allowance. That, Chair, is the written submission that's before us, so that's, I think, what we've got to look at. The Public Protector then came last week to engage us on the issue, and we need to also consider what was said then. I don't know if you want me to start with addressing you on the issues.
Let's take them one at a time, so that instead of taking them all, do you prefer to do all of them? All right, fine. Go ahead.
I mean, Chair, firstly, look, unfortunately, no media here today.
I think they're listening to you and watching you.
Let's hope. I mean, they
wherever they are,
they tend to follow. There's no cameras or anything, but they tend to sort of follow the public protector like moths to a flame. So unfortunately, she's not here, so they're not here. But yeah, I think on the outset, I was a bit unhappy with the media reports of the meeting, which focused really on questions raised about the public protector salary. And really, to say up front, I mean, we support the public protector and the work that she does, and the positive image that the public has of the public protector's office is very important. And so, nothing that I'm going to say is in any way intended to undermine that. But as far as the proposal basically was that there was the outstanding issue of whether we had, well, we can maybe come to that at the end because it's not actually directly linked, whether the allegation made by the public protector that I think she withdrew, that we had decided earlier, but we can come back to that maybe. I don't know where you want that fitted in. But the basic proposal was that the public protector is getting at the level of a... maybe one other preliminary issue. I think that what has happened is the National Assembly determines the conditions of the public protector and the deputy. But unfortunately, the way the National Assembly has dealt with it is not to pass new conditions every time, but to amend the existing ones. So the result of that is you've effectively got to look at four documents going back to 1995. Mm. There's the original one. Was it amended in 96, 2002, and then 2004. But even 2004, it wasn't a comprehensive review, it was a change. So the Act says no less than that of a judge. The 95, the first one just gave an amount, it didn't link it to anything. Then in 96, it is specified an annual salary at a rate equal to that of a judge of the appeal of judge of appeal of the Supreme Court. So you've got to sort of go looking for it. I think what would be very important for the unit on constitutional, on the Chapter 9s, is to, as with legislation, produce one document which on the remuneration and conditions of service of the public protector, and as with legislation that's amended, reflects the date of each amendment. So if you look at the Constitution, it's one Constitution. We don't have to look at all the other 16 amendments. They're all included. And when you get to that section, you will find section 37 amended by whatever the date was. So that's just a preliminary. But Chair, then on the issue, the argument seems to be that there's a big salary gap between the public protector and the deputy. My rough calculations are that it's in the region of about 30%. Now, as I pointed out in the last meeting, that is similar to the gap between the speaker and the deputy speaker's salary, or the chair and the deputy chair of the NCOP. I don't really see that as a thing. We already have that in our system. I don't see that as a basis for saying that there should be this, you know, that the current level is wrong. As far as the other benefits, you know, that was specifically asked, there was the issue of leave, and that was on the basis of the deputy, sorry, what the public protector gets and what a judge gets. I don't think you can link, and I have a bit of a problem with this linkage with judges, because as I said in the meeting last week, judges do different things. You know, they sit in court, they attend court cases, which are definable, have beginnings and ends. At the end of that court case, they've got to consider the evidence and write a judgment. The public protector, as an ombudsman, does not. I know she said that there are hearings, but they generally conduct a wider investigation, because the whole idea of an ombudsman is a much quicker resolution. Judgments are not written, it's reports. unlike court cases, those judges are not judgment. Those reports are not appealable. So if the public protector makes a finding, that's it. You can take it on review in terms of looking at the processes, but you cannot appeal, which you can with any other judgment from a lower court. And that's a huge fundamental difference. So I'm not really in support of the leave issues. The issue was raised to the motor vehicle scheme, that the deputy public protector is utilizing her private vehicle in the course of her official functions. With judges, they're given a state vehicle as the public protector is. But again, you know, I'll come on to the backdating issue, but I'm not that sympathetic to that. Then a settlement and transport and assistance allowance, which the judges get and the public protector gets, I don't think it is appropriate, in that it's particularly applicable to the appeal court judges, who basically live elsewhere, and I think it also applies to the constitutional court judges. They live elsewhere, well, particularly let's take Supreme Court of Appeal. They live elsewhere. They go to Bloemfontein for a few days a week, not every week. None of them, or very few of them, live in Bloemfontein. They have other homes. Judge Imhati, when he came to make submissions on the code, he was going back to his home in Grahamstown. He's the president of the Supreme Court of Appeal. So the settlement allowance, which is monthly, and I think in the public protector's case it's about $7,000 a month, I may be wrong though, but that's the figure I remember, is to compensate for that. You don't have an office that you go to where you've got staff, this is now as a judge, where you've got staff that you direct, that you tell what to do, and you discuss with them, which is the case with the public protector. There is a public protector's office headquarters in Joburg. You go into that office. If you're not in the office on a Monday morning, then presumably there may be staff waiting for you. Whereas you don't find that with the judges. They go in when there is a case to be heard, or maybe a meeting with other judges, but it's sort of once off. So I really don't think that is applicable. The issue that I thought there could be more flexibility on was, so anyway, basically I'm not, this is an individual position, it's not a party, but I'm not really seeing any real basis for saying there should be an increase. And the salary is not bad, it's 1.2 million, okay, which is a good salary, it's more than what most members of parliament are earning. There was a request that the increases be backdated to the date of her appointment. And, Chair, obviously if we decide not to increase, then there won't be any backdate. But I do want to put on record that I have a huge problem with that request. The conditions were worked out. She accepted on the basis of those conditions. And I think there is a problem that the country is facing, both for state employees and for other people, taking a job and then shortly after you've started saying, no, this isn't enough. So we found it with some of the workers at the World Cup stadiums who got employed and then wanted to go on strike to say it's not enough. You have it sometimes with the IEC workers during the election. They get employed and then they want more. You saw it with the census workers, which is a similar thing. So I really think to any form of backdating is sending the wrong message, but the backdating would be dependent on whether we do decide on any increase. A chair on the car allowance also specifically, just because it's linked to the backdating. Part of the deputy's package was specified as it was a basic salary and a flexible portion. The flexible portion comprises medical aid bonus, the 13th check, housing allowance, so that takes care of the settlement allowance, the car allowance, and a cash allowance in any combination. So it wasn't as if no thought was given to the issue of the car. And presumably with the car allowance, it's tax deductible if you've used it for work. Then on the gratuity, the last issue on the gratuity, which the public protector gets, and it's fairly substantial. I think the gratuity, somebody can correct me, but I think it's in the region of about 5 million. It may be more. That is after a 7-year period. Now, Chair, the reason that the National Assembly opted for a gratuity is because the public protector serves a 7-year term which is not renewable. And presumably the idea was to insulate the public protector from economic pressures when they leave, which may affect their findings. We do the same with judges where they have a salary for life. So that's why we opted for that. Now, in the case of the deputy, the National Assembly didn't opt. And maybe it's a question we need to look at, should we? Should we have or should we not do it now? But the issue with the deputy is that does the deputy need that insulation? A 7-year contract post at an amount of a million, I mean, that is what deputy director generals are getting. They are using that to contribute to a pension fund. That is their choice. Members of parliament, I think there is a small gratuity to because you can lose your job before you know it, as it were, in that when it comes to an election, your job ends on the day of the election, and the result may come out a few days later, and you find you were on the list but you weren't high enough up, and you're out. So that was part of the purpose of that gratuity, but I think it's fairly small, particularly if you've only been elected for one term. But as I said, the difference there is that you can't be expected to apply for a new job without when you may be re-elected, and you won't know until you've actually already lost your job whether you got it back again. But in the case of the deputy, I think the questions we need to look at, is it necessary for the deputy? It is necessary, I think, for the public protector. One key difference between the public protector and the deputy is that two key differences. The deputy's position is renewable. Okay, public protector's is not, deputy's is. It's renewable for a further 7 years, which I think implies that the Parliament, because it's in the Act, was not so concerned about the insulation. The reason we don't want to make the public protector's term renewable is the fear that they would then be open to being nice to the executive to get the job back. So we said for that reason it mustn't be renewable. We didn't say that for the deputy, and I think that's quite a key thing. The deputy, current deputy, has served one term, she's eligible for another. So there's less reason, what I'm saying, is to protect her. The other factor is that in terms of, and I think it's right the way through, you know, we know what the public protector does. She writes reports. Those names are in her reports. The reports are in her name. Okay, they are not in the name of the deputy. Again, unlike a judgment, where a judge will write a report and put their name to it. Okay, all the reports are in the name of the public protector, and I think it's shown by the fact that the deputy's position is not very high profile. You don't hear of the deputy anywhere near in comparison to the way you hear of the public protector. So, Chair, I'm those are individual views. I mean, but I think the bottom line is that whatever we do, we need a rational basis, good reasons to affect changes, whatever they are, and we also need to consider the changes how the changes will affect the other Chapter 9s. And then obviously if we do want to take decisions based on funding, we need to engage with Treasury and with the Department about the availability of that funding. Thank you, and sorry for taking a while.
That's fine. Mrs. Schaefer. Thanks, Teacher. Just some of the comments. I think actually the argument that the Deputy, I mean, yes, she's not high profile, but the fact of the matter is that the fact that her term is renewable would make her more susceptible to being nice to the executive, in fact, than the public protector, because the public protector is appointed for one fixed term of 7 years, whereas the other one is renewable. So I think that actually the contrary argument applies, because she's the one who might want an extension of the term, and then she would want to be nice to the executive. So I don't agree with that argument. The fact that her term is renewable doesn't necessarily mean there's a guarantee that it will be renewed. And I don't think we should make decisions on her salary based on that it might be renewed. It might not. I agree that I think the gratuity is fair. If DGs are getting pension, she's not getting pension. I think that is a fair, it's something that she should get, and I think it's something she should have got from the start. I don't know about back to 2005, I do support the argument that you agree to a package and then straight after that you then start questioning it. I fully agree with that. I don't think it's right. But the fact of the matter is we were asked to deal with this matter in 2010 already and we didn't do it. So my view is that if we do agree to any kind of increase, then we should backdate it at least until 2010. I don't agree further than that. As far as what her functions are, we can't really make a decision based on what individual DPPs do, but it's quite clear that she does play a very active role in the department, and just because she's not getting the public accolades doesn't mean she's not doing the work. And it does seem that she has got quite a lot of responsibilities in that institution. There also is an ever-increasing workload, which we've seen. They're just not getting through it. They're not getting to all the inquiries they need to get. So I think she's got quite a lot of work that needs to be done, and it's responsible work that she has to be independent and accountable for. As far as the reference to comparing with judges, I mean, I think the only real reason why it's been done is because that's what it says in the Act. It says her salary shall not be less than that of a judge. So, you know, that's why they are looking at judges as a reference point. I mean, yes, they're not exactly the same, but they are also independent, and they're required to be independent. So they certainly are, a high degree of integrity is demanded of the public protector in particular. And it's also evident in the appointment procedures, where there has to be a huge majority for her and the Auditor General, more so than any of the other Chapter 9. So it is regarded as a very high profile position that you have to have a high degree of integrity for, and even if you can't be taken on appeal, you can be taken on review, which is not the same, but it's at least some kind of check and balance. As far as the actual amount is concerned, I still don't understand where the 1.2 million came from and how the AG accepted it. And I actually would like to ask this committee to write to the AG and ask. Because the way I see it, I mean, the Auditor General. Because the Act is quite clear that the salary is determined by a committee of Parliament. And now we're told that, no, well, they felt it was fair, you should push it up and push it up and push it up. Now, maybe it was fair, but it wasn't legal. And maybe what we can do, if we accept that that is a fair amount, we could maybe ratify that amount from now, or backdate, or whatever we feel is right. But I really have a problem with that fact that, you know, the previous public protector just decided to increase it, and now it seems the CEO just decided to increase it. Based on what? What's the point of having provision that says the Committee of Parliament has to approve the salary if they can just do it themselves? So I think, yeah, I mean, I agree that I think 1.2 million is not that bad, actually. But we do maybe need some kind of a reference point to peg it at. And maybe we need to look at the judges for that purpose, because the other public protector salary is actually referred to as not being less than a judge and has now been determined by us as an FCA judge. So it would make sense to pick the DPPs at some kind of judge level, maybe as a normal judge, just for purposes of knowing what amount is going to go on from here onwards. And maybe we need to, you know, I do think we need to rectify the situation as of when reviews are to be expected, because it is too vague. And if you take on a job saying, well, you know, it's going to be reviewed, you might expect it to be reviewed once a year, and we decide it's once every 5 years. And I think it is a bit unfair for people not to have more clarity on when it is actually going to be reviewed. That's my initial view. Thanks.
Mr. Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I think it's important to say that we fully support what Honourable Jeffrey said about supporting the public protector and the work that she and her office does, and the positive image that the public protector has. That is hugely important. What we are speaking about here is salary levels. It is no reflection on the good work that is being done. I tend to agree with the previous speakers when they mentioned that when you enter a contract of employment at a certain level, you understand what you're engaging in. And it's then unfortunate that often you have people coming back to say, well, they're not happy with the levels that they were appointed at. Chair, there is, however, a much broader issue here that is raised in the research document, that there doesn't seem to be uniformity, and that's a separate issue that we might have to look at, the Chapter 9 institutions and the deciding of salaries there, and that is raised there. In this particular case, Parliament has, in terms of the legislation, a committee has to decide on that, on the salary of the public protector, and clearly the committee hasn't done its work over the years, and that the public protector now sits in this difficult situation, and we need to find a way of helping the deputy public protector. The separate issue of the uniformity is a separate issue that needs to be addressed. Obviously, the way forward should be to amend the legislation that the commission that sits, the remuneration of office bearers, should decide on that level as well. They decide on the judges, they decide on members of parliament, and it makes sense that they should decide on Chapter 9 institutions across the board as well. But that's a separate issue. Let's just focus on the deputy public protector's salary at the moment. The linking with the judges is as per the national legislation. I agree the job description is totally different, but one hinges, and so one's got to look at the different performances of a judge, the leave that a judge has, the recesses to write judgments. There's a totally different way of work. So I think that purely it's the link is just to look at the independence of the institution. That's why it's a link to the judges. I see that in 2010, I tend to agree with Ms. Schaefer that we were supposed to have dealt with this in 2010. We need to find a way of helping the deputy public protector. I'm not in favour of a backdating for 5 years. I think there is huge fiscal pressure on the National Treasury at the moment, and clearly we would need an input from National Treasury as to the financial implications of any decision we take. But because we didn't do it as a committee in 2010 and the public protector, the CEO of the office, increase that salary, I would think we need to condone that at the very least. I'm not in favour of the massive gratuity that's considered, that would result in almost 5.5 million, particularly in view that it is a renewable period as opposed to the public protector, which is a non-renewable period of 7 years. And I think, Chair, we just need to be very careful, as a last comment, of creating a precedent that is followed. Other public other Chapter 9 institutions will start saying, yes, but why is this deputy on that level? We also want to be on that level, and you can then have our decision that we take here being used by other Chapter 9 institutions to say we must increase our benefits, with huge implications for the fiscus. So let's be very careful. Let's use Salomic wisdom and find a way forward, possibly to condone the past increases, and in that way we at least will meet some way of what the public protectors asked, but definitely not everything that has been requested. Thank you, Chair.
Anybody else? Advocate Holland is...
thank you, Chairperson. Well, I want to agree with the speakers who say that there was a reason the previous public protector to take it upon himself to determine the increase in the salary of the deputy public protector, because the parliament that was supposed to do that didn't do it. Actually, while Steve says we must condone that, he was actually doing us a favor, because he was doing our work for us by doing that. And of course, the reason we didn't do it is also because of the vagueness of the provision that requires us to determine the salary of the public protector, because it doesn't say within which interval must we do that determination. I think we need to find a way of dealing with that, as somebody has already said, as to how regularly. In my view, because everybody's salary is supposed to be reviewed every year, I imagine that's what we need to do, to review it every year, as it is the case in other instances. Which means, therefore, that If you agree, as I'm inclined to do, that we increase the salary, then the backdating of the outstanding salary should be at the time that they brought it up to our attention that we're supposed to be doing this determination, which is the 2010, I think May, no, whatever date it was that this was brought to our attention on. Regarding the what do you call this thing of comparing with the judge, pegging.
Yes.
Yeah, at the judge's level. I think we're stuck with that. Because the public protector's salary is now, as I understand, at the level of the SCA. What? Judge. Judge, that was not a SCA judge. No. Yeah. Yeah, because of the passage of time, the salary has had to increase to that level of the SCA. Otherwise, the law requires us to peg it at the level of a judge. Now, there's no obligation on us to peg it at the level of a judge. That is the salary of a deputy public protector. First of all, deputy public protector does not need to have been a judge at the time of their appointment. And I maintain that that is the reason why the law said the salary of a public protector must not be below that of a judge, because of that possibility that we might appoint someone who was a judge and we do not want to lower the salary that that person is having any. So we're left now without any guidance regarding the deputy public protector, who need not be a judge in the first place, as to how, where, with what do we compare the salary that is supposed to be paid. But because of the argument that the work that she does is not that different from that of the public protector, because even if, because in the normal manner of things, the public protector delegates work for her to do. And I agree that she doesn't get a public media profile. But that does not mean that she's not doing any work. There must be lots of work. One assumes that they do without it coming to the public eye. And also, when the public protector is away, she becomes the public protector and has all the authority and responsibilities that attach to that position. So I want to agree then that in the circumstances, we need to look at pegging a salary at the level of a judge, of a high court. So that would be my view at this stage.
Okay. Mr. Jeffrey?
Yeah, I think there's sort of four issues we've got to decide on. One, do we increase her salary? Two, do we make any improvements in the terms and conditions? So that would be things like the leave and the settlement allowance and the car allowance. Number three, do we give her a gratuity? And number four, particularly if we answer yes to one and two, do we backdate it? Now, just in a brief response to Debbie, I agree that the deputy public protector is more susceptible to pressure without a gratuity, more susceptible to pressure by virtue of the fact that a term can be extended than the public protector is. So I agree with that. My argument is that it shows the lesser importance of the position. That we said the public protector position is so important, we do not want a renewable term. We said as Parliament, the deputies is not so important, or not as important, therefore she can have an extension. And I think that is quite fundamental, both on the gratuity and the fact that you need to give this protection of a salary when they leave office, and in terms of how we view their position. So I just want that to be the fundamental point, that yes, she's more susceptible, the position is more susceptible, but two, the decision of Parliament in passing the legislation was that we accept it, that's how we see it. Now, on the four questions, the issue of the salary is basically, she gets 1.2, oh, firstly, just the issue of what was done before. You know, the difficulty is that the, I'm not sure exactly what happened. The current public protector still feels it was legitimate. The Auditor General has not picked it up as unauthorized expenditure, so the problem of saying the Auditor General must relook at it is almost saying to the Auditor General, well, did you make a mistake? And I don't know if that is appropriate, that we want, whether he did or didn't, whether we want the Auditor General to be admitting to that. We may need to recognize that this was done and say we don't think it was a good idea and we accept it and but don't do it again type of thing. I mean, I see there is also a thing of we in 2002 approved the conditions, employment conditions of the public protector staff. Now, I don't think we've done that in the last 10 years. I think that just happens there. So there may be other things we're not doing that we should be doing. But on the issue of the salary, she's getting about 1.2 million now. The public protector gets about 1.7. The difference, and somebody can please tell me if I'm wrong, from my rough standard 7... no, it was, look, I did maths for matric. I did okay in maths and matric. But anyway, was 30%. As I said, that is similar to the speaker, the deputy speaker. Are we saying that is not enough? That the 30% level is too high? If we're saying that, on what basis are we saying it? Nobody is disputing that she works, and that I'm sure she works hard. But 1.2 million a year per annum is not a small amount of money, particularly when you look at the other Chapter 9s, and also the salary of the, it's similar to the salary of the CEO of the public protector. So that's basically the question we've got to look at. On what basis are we saying that her current salary is not enough? I don't think we need to tag it, peg it to judges, because the legislation, which was Parliament, was said no less, public protector no less than the salary of a judge. A resolution which is a lesser majority then linked it to the salary of a judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal. To me it's a question of what basis are we going to use. And then I do think a fundamental issue is that there are no reports in the name of the Deputy Public Protector, which is for me a huge issue, because it means that the Public Protector keeps the overall responsibility. So even if the Deputy Public Protector writes a report, then the Public Protector has to okay it. So it's not just a question of not having seen her in the media, it's a question of the positions are different. But the bottom line on the salary is a 30% gap, because that's effectively what they were the argument they were using. Is that too much, or is it okay? And my personal view is, well, if the difference between the speaker and the deputy speaker, and remember when the speaker is away, the deputy is the acting speaker, and this was a rate that wasn't determined by us, it was determined by the Commission, the remuneration of public office bearers. If that is okay, why can it not be okay for the deputy? But if we want to motivate for a salary increase, we've got to look at then what are the reasons. Terms and conditions, Chair, I don't really, I mean, it's been the settlement allowance, which I think is illogical for a public protector. And I don't think we were correct. We did it as National Assembly, or previous parliaments did it. It was actually it was before I came here, so it wasn't me. it was, Dean, it was in the 90s, you were there. It was you and the chair. And advocate policy. I think it's fine. And even with the car, the package included a car allowance. So again, we can look at the factors, but I'm not persuaded by anything. The gratuity issue is You know, I think the one point that was made, remember, I mean, she's getting at the level of a DDG. DDGs are, I think, also contract. I'm not sure if they're allowed to belong to the government employees' pension fund. But generally with contract workers, they don't get pensions because they're not long-term. And it's then up to them to use their money to contribute to a pension fund. I mean, you don't have to go through a government pension fund. And so basically other very senior employees at 1.2 million use that 1.2 million to contribute to a pension fund. Why couldn't the deputy? I think the proposal for the deputy, Steve found it, and I may be wrong, but they were asking for was something in the region of 5 million. Because a gratuity doesn't have to be backdated. She gets it when she leaves. If she gets reappointed, she will get it at the end of the second term. But I do think, yeah, on the document from the researchers, so it's Christine's, author C. Silkstone, and according to documents provided the 1st of January 2011, the DPP's total package is worth 1.2 million. The DPP's eventual gratuity, if she vacates office at the end of this term of office, that's the 30th of November, is worth approximately 5.497 million. So that's in terms of if you use the formula. But I think on the gratuity, the first issue is, should she get a gratuity? That's what we need to look at, and why. And I think there are the clear differences with the public protector who gets a gratuity. And then if we agree that she should get a gratuity, then it's an amount, it's an issue of how much. So if this is the deputy's gratuity, then the gratuity for the public protector herself must be substantially more. Although I think this was on the, Christina's, it's not on the where they increased it to the salary of the judge president. Of the judge president. So, yeah, the public protectors would then be a bit more, but not substantially more. But, Chair, I'll leave the last point. But as I said, I think salary, if we want to increase it, what's the basis? And I haven't seen anything. Terms and conditions, I haven't seen anything. Gratuity, more flexible, but there are reasons why the public protector gets a gratuity, which do not apply to the deputy. And then I think maybe the last point is maybe to say at this point, I understand that the department is planning to introduce legislation to put the responsibility for the salaries of the Chapter 9s under the Commission for the Remuneration of Public Representatives. So what I'm saying is that I don't think it's necessary for us to, we may end up not having to do a review, they can do the review and then we just have to approve it.
Well, I'm glad you made that point. The problem is we're not sure when that legislation will be tabled, because it might come or be processed after 5 years and then you're still stuck with a problem. Anybody else? Mrs. Schaefer.
Thanks, Chair. The point that I'm concerned about is, I mean, I agree 30% probably in principle is not a bad difference between the two offices. But the point is, on what basis then is it going to be increased? We can't say it's going to stay on 1.2 now for the next 5 years until we do another review. Now, can I just finish?
There's an inflationary increase every year, remember?
Is there?
Yes.
Because Dean's just pointed out, this committee report of 2005, where the DPP's conditions were agreed to. Paragraph 4 says all conditions of service and benefits, including annual increments, subsistence and travel expenditure, relocation expenditure, and all leave be determined in terms of the Public Service Act. Which seems to be sort of different now to what we're saying. So, I mean, there's so many different documents. I mean, we actually need something kind of...
I missed that. I must have.
Well, so did I. Christine pointed it to Dean and Dean pointed it out to me. Yeah. So, you know, it's we need to look at that again in light of that, because that's what the resolution, the committee, the NA, I think, resolution was, based on the committee report. So,
And that's a House resolution, right?
That's a House resolution, yeah. National Assembly, 4th of August 2005.
It seems what is known as SMS, senior manager. You know,
yeah, they regard her as senior manager.
A whole of things apply to those people.
Exactly. Although, yeah. I mean, it still says it's got to be by a committee of this House, so I would imagine we could change that resolution because it was a committee resolution that went to the National Assembly. So we could change it, I suppose. But at the moment, this is what's governing it. So that doesn't really detract, actually, now that I think about it, from the fact that we could agree that maybe it should have been done earlier and backdated to a certain point, maybe, if we agree. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, I do have sympathy. I think Mr. Swart's being a little harsh on the gratuity issue. I don't know, I mean, I think we can certainly discuss the amount of the gratuity, but if she is not getting a pension, which was specifically excluded in this resolution, I don't think that's fair. And she should be at least given something in lieu of a pension that she can buy a pension at the sort of level where people in full-time employment would be able to do that. And it, you know, that maybe could be the amount of the gratuity. But if there is no pegging, if we say it's 1.2 million, JJ, via the chair, if we say it's 1.2 million, on what basis is it going to be increased every year? Because she's not covered by anything, as we meant to have passed legislation to say what does cover them. It's not covered by the Independent Remuneration Committee at this point. So, I mean, in terms of what is she then going to get increases? So it just makes more sense to peg it at a certain level that is going to get increased every year, such as a normal judge. So on that basis, I mean, a judge's salary now is, what, 1.4? So from that point of view, it just makes more sense, because then we don't have to review it every year and worry about on what basis it's going to increase, and we'll then have to reconsider it every year again. It will be done in terms of the independent remuneration. We can specify that is how it will work. Because you know how long, as you say, we don't know when the legislation is going to come to us. And then they sit now for another 5 years before they get another increase.
So Debbie is now proposing that it be pegged at the level of a judge's salary, which is at 1.4. Okay, Mr. Jeffrey.
Yeah, look, I don't like the pegging, because they perform different roles. And the Act pegs, the Act doesn't even peg. The Act basically says no less than a High Court judge. So it's not a pegging, it can be more, it's no less. And that presumably was, as Dr. Misa has pointed out, because we were considering maybe having a judge as a public protector, or at least the possibility of having a judge as a public protector. So I think it's just quite arbitrary. We did then in the House resolution link the second House resolution, not the first, link the public protector salary to the salary of a judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal. But I think that there are problems with that. Now, I don't find a problem with Clause 4 in the remuneration of the Deputy Public Protector's salary. I mean, because what had happened then was that the decision of the House was, and the committee presumably, was to link the salary of the Deputy to the senior public servants. And I think at that point it was at the level of the Chief Director. The public protector then increased it when it came to, because they felt that the deputy shouldn't earn less than senior management, although that is not a problem at a municipal level, where senior management earn quite a bit more in the metros and the bigger municipalities than the councillors. But what that clause 4 does is to allow for increases. So it says, all conditions of service and service benefits, including annual increments, subsistence and travel expenditure, so although she doesn't get a car allowance, she's getting subsistence and travel expenditure, relocation expenditure, and all leave will be determined in terms of the Public Service Act as those provisions apply to the senior management service. So it basically was saying annual increase, same as senior public service, senior management service of the public service. So one can go back and look at what those inflationary linked increases were, but her salary is increasing. I mean, confirm through you, Chair, to Christine, that I'm sure if one looks at the last few years after the big jump to a DDG level, that she's not getting what she got when it's been increasing, and it shows the flexibility. Now, the question is, and it's something the public protector herself has raised, should the deputy's salary be linked to that, as the National Assembly did
be linked to the public service, and they're not that happy with that. I think there's some basis for concerns, but at the same time there may be more similarities. I mean, I don't think it's really that good to link it anywhere, to judge or to public servant. But I don't see so much of a problem with sub 4. It means that the salary has been increasing, okay? So she's been getting annual increments. I think the senior management, I mean, we got five. How much did senior management get last year? I mean, they don't, yeah. But it's been increasing. There are subsistence and travel allowances, which in spite of the request for a car, they haven't actually given us the detail of. And the leave is basically public service leave. But I actually think that the position is more linked in terms of the type of work to the public service work than a judge's work, where, as I said, you have hearings, you come for specified appointments, and most of the work you can actually do at home in terms of reading up all the stuff in preparation for the case, hear the case, and then you can even be considering your judgment at home, whereas it's much more hands-on. So anyway, and then as far as the gratuity, look, I mean, She's got the money. What you do with the money is up to you. Whether you purchase, contribute to a pension fund or not is up to you. That is what happens to everybody who's... I mean, there are two types of workers, employees. There are those who are employed forever, in which case if they're dismissed, they can bring cases or whatever. And there are those, and it's a very large number, who are employed for a contract. This is a contract. And then in a contract, I think most of them don't get a contribution to a pension fund. They have to sort it out themselves. So I'm not quite sure what this unfairness is that Debbie speaks about. You said not, it's not fair that she doesn't get a gratuity. That's what you said. Well, you said it's not fair that she's not getting a pension or gratuity. And my point is, well, then that would apply surely to most contract workers. You get a contract... For 5 years, in this case it's 7 years, and you get your salary. Not all the time, no. And she gets an annual, well, she gets a 13, she's, on her salary it's down as a, well, it's a 13th check basically, which she
yes, she gets a 13th.
She gets a 13th check, but it's not performance linked, it's automatic. But the bottom line is, I don't think it's unfair. We can say we want to give her a gratuity, but I don't think we can say we're giving her a gratuity because it's unfair. The House resolution was unfair that she didn't get a pension. That was up to her, as it is with contract workers.
No. Let me just correct you. This is in terms of the resolution of August 2005. Item 5 of that resolution, that membership of the government employee pension fund be specifically excluded.
Yes. But I think Debbie's point is that's unfair, and I'm saying I don't think so, because she was not getting a pension. I presume it's there because the senior management of the public service the public service belonged to GPS, and I think it was to clear up any confusion over that with point 4. But she could have used part of her money for a pension.
Just on these points, I think David said I was a bit harsh on the gratuity, and I think
the point was that I said, maybe to correct, I said the amount envisaged in Christine's document of 5.5 million is exorbitant. That's if we are going to consider that. But I tend to agree with Mr. Jeffrey. If one sees the specific exclusion, had she been included in the government's pension fund, she would have contributed 7% of her salary. That's what state employers contribute. You've got to pay into that. Mm-hmm. And then the government contributes an amount towards that, and then at the end of a period you get that money out. We're looking at something separate. So I think John's submission that she saved money by not contributing to the government pension fund, she should have used that money to buy a gratuity. There is definitely, which enhances his argument that there is that it's not, we're not being unfair. But let's look, if there's I'm opposed to the 5.5 million, that total amount. Maybe one can look at something less. Something, you know, but it's difficult to gauge because we're speculating as to whether she'll end her term this year in November after 1 7-year period. She might be reappointed for another 7-year period. The Commission for Remuneration might come out with a totally different view. So it's very much speculative. But I want to emphasize the fact that she has been receiving that inflation-linked, I think it's 5% per year as well. There has been that increase. It's probably, it's varied as per, you know, last year we all, it was 5%, it might have been more previously. So there has been annual increments as well. And I would again reiterate what's been said about the 2010 level. Let's look at that. Let's condone that. Thank you, Chair.
The point remains, on what basis was that increase done? The DPPs.
2007.
No, I know it was done, but on what basis is it done, and what basis is it going to be done in future? That's my point. I mean, and if we don't specify clearly now how it's going to be done, is it going to be done annually, on, and if so, in terms of what?
I think the point Advocate Holomisa makes is probably the answer. Because the Justice Portfolio Committee in 2007 and the National Assembly failed to fulfill their duties, the then public protector took matters into his own hands and did what he did. We can argue about whether what he did was legal or not. That's something else. And that's probably the answer. That's the basis. There was pressure. I still don't understand, because she was appointed in 2005, and that's just 2 years down the line. You see?
My point isn't, I mean, that is one of my points, but that's not what I'm saying now. My point now is we need to establish from now onwards quite clearly, if we agree to a certain package, in terms of what is it going to be increased every year, on what basis is it going to be? Is it going to be increased every year or not? And I think we need to make that quite clear so that these kind of things don't happen where they say, well, we should have done this or we should have done that. We either say, you know, we'll review it in 2 years' time, or we feel it should be renewed according to some kind of criteria.
Well, before I recognize you, Mr. Chief, why doesn't the resolution of the House in 2005 not apply? It says in form, just hear me, that all conditions of service and service benefits, including annual increments, subsistence and travel expenditure, etc., etc., and all leave, be determined in terms of the Public Service Act as those provisions apply to the senior management service. Now, what's changed?
It hasn't been done according to that.
Are you sure? Mr. Jeffrey?
I mean, my understanding is that FORC has been remains
to be applied. That the level was at the level of a chief director, and it then for with the annual increase increment has been applying. The change though was that in addition, in 2007, I don't know if it's once or twice, the public protector revised it upwards. So that was a sort of in an additional amount. But otherwise, it's been constant. And in 2000, I think what you would find is 2008, four applied, the annual increase increment. 2009, four applied, 2010, 2011. So it's been applying. So I don't think we need to say anything with that. On the, well, 2007, it may be four applied, and it went up to effectively a DDG level. I think we need to be careful of the wording. I mean, Advocate Holomisa says that we didn't do our work. I don't know if we were asked. Maybe we were, maybe we weren't. But I think it's a thing of it's happened. And let's not say it was wrong, but if it was wrong, we can go with something on a bit more finesse than that. But I don't think we can say it was wrong, but I would agree we need to recognize.
Yes, it was an addition.
Because you see, the issue is, I mean, for Mr. Slot, that all this, if this is wrong, it would be unauthorized expenditure. These accounts have been audited. That hasn't been picked up.
Well, I think you need to be careful there. Carry on that.
Everything. The point I was making was that the law is not vague as to when it is that we're supposed to make the determination. Now the question is, yeah, when is that? When is that? When is that? So something needs to be done about this particular provision to make it clearer than it is now. Because we don't know who is to blame now, whether it's ourselves or whether it was somebody else. Or we're supposed to be reminded. If so, by who? Well, suppose by the Office of the Public Protector. But if they keep quiet, expecting us to do the right thing. So we need to do something about it. I mean, as we said, in general, the salary packages of this office ought at some stage to be looked into. But as we said previously, we are dealing now specifically with this one, the DPP.
Well, I think in defense of the Justice Portfolio Committee, if it is argued that we were in keeping with section 2A sub 5, from time to time, and it was done in 2005. Well, that's it. It was done in 2005. Well, that's how you see it. It depends on your own interpretation of from time to time. I don't know what that means. And I think, Advocate Holomisa, we erred back in the day when we agreed to this. But you're correct. Because after last week's meeting, I kept asking myself, well, what triggers? What is the trigger? It's not clear. There's no trigger. Is that the trigger?
Well, I don't know, but it seems that the trigger. And maybe they
Bearing in mind, sorry, Christine, I'll recognize, you know, bearing in mind that a review doesn't necessarily mean you're going to grant an increase. Please also bear that in mind. We are now conducting a review. And that doesn't mean that at the end of this process, you're going to say, okay, we'll give her another 100,000 rand per annum. You could say, well, the salary remains the same. You've done your review. Ooh, now you're raising something else. Christine first, and then Mr. Jeffrey.
I mean, to be fair, that if you look at, I mean, over the years, I know that the public protector has raised the issue of salary, including the deputy public protector, before 2010 was raised. But I would have to go and check my notes.
All right.
Yeah, I think a determination is you have the review where you look at all the factors, and then a determination is what you decide.
Follows.
Is what you decide is the decision. So you determine after the review this is what it will be. But Chair, I think also in defence of the Justice Committee, of which you and I and Mr. Swart were definitely there, Advocate Holomisa is saying that he wasn't a member at particular crucial times.
He wasn't there that day.
I think the legislation, I stand under correction, speaks of a committee of the House. It is not automatically the Justice Committee. We generally tend, because we deal with them in the budget, to deal with them. For example, this committee did not appoint the public protector. It was a special ad hoc committee that was appointed to do that. So it's not automatically us. We generally tend to do it, but I think it's it's up to the House to determine what happens. So it's not automatically us. So then the responsibility is then very much definitely with Advocate Holomisa and Ms. Smuts as members of the National Assembly at that time, whether or not they were members of this committee. Okay. But Chair, I think look, I mean I'm not sure where we're going. I mean definitely the resolution of 2005 provided for annual increments. Okay? So we didn't have to do anything. Well, the National Assembly didn't have to do anything. She was the public, Deputy Public Protector was getting an annual increase linked to the public service. I think the Act is reviewing from time to time, and we may in our resolution want to say that look, we maybe need to amend the Act for greater clarity. But if there is an amendment linking it to the or giving it to the Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, then that amendment will take care of that. But I think what we should do in the report is say we need to look at that. With regard to a review of the Deputy Public Protector's salary, terms of conditions, I think it's a little bit difficult doing it in the absence of a review of the Public Protector's because it is so linked. So the whole reason judges come in is because the National Assembly, specifically in 2006, linked the Public Protector's salary to that of a judge of the SCA. So I don't think we can review the deputies in isolation. Obviously, a review of the Public Protector's salary, there's a requirement for both of them, and it's general administrative law, labour law. I mean, you can't decrease it. So raising the question of a review of the Public Protector's salary is not in any way meant to imply disadvantaging her, and I just want to stress that. But I just think it's difficult looking at the deputies in isolation. And the issue we've been given by the Speaker, because the request for the review of the deputies was addressed to the Speaker, who then referred it to us, is the deputies. But Chair, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long whether we want to try and reach a decision now, whether we want to think about things. I mean, there are, as I said, those four, three questions.
I want you to, I'm referring you to section 219 sub 5 of the Constitution. It's the legislation we're talking about. And I suddenly realize they talk about the public protector, but not the deputy. So we're assuming that included in that will be or should be the deputy. National legislation must establish frameworks for determining the salaries, allowances, and benefits of judges, the public protector, the auditor general, and members of any commission provided for in the Constitution, including the Broadcasting Authority. So, I'm not sure, then, honourable members, whether this is going to solve our problem. It might not. 219, sub 5, Jamie.
Remember when the Constitution was passed, it wasn't.
Well, I don't know then, Christine.
Well, the deputy, I mean, she is an officer. She's appointed by the president on the recommendation of the National Assembly. And then she also can only be removed by a majority of the National
Assembly.
Is
it the deputy?
Yes.
Do the whole
toot? Yes.
All right. So essentially you're saying then the deputy should be form part of that group.
See, I would have thought that she is by implication, okay. Because it refers to the bodies and the commissions in Chapter 9. Which
no, it refers to the members, that's why I'm asking you.
It refers to the members. That's your commission.
All right. Okay.
A question,
Advocate Holomisa,
There's a question which I don't know is going to be of help that I asked previously as to whether anyone knows as to why it was that while in the first place there was no deputy commissioner, deputy public protector, and later on there were two public protectors, and later on the law was amended to provide for only one deputy. What did that mean? Does it mean in the first place they thought the workload would be enough for the public protector to deal with it, but later discovered that there was so much workload that they needed, there was a need for two deputies, and later it was discovered, no, after all, the workload is not that big, so one deputy. Because I would imagine that would give some indication as to at what level did Parliament consider the importance of this office of the deputy public protector. Also because there's, unlike the public protector, there's no reference to any other office in terms of which her salary can be determined. Mm.
First, Mr. Jeffrey, and then Debbie Schaefer.
Yeah, I'm a bit shocked at Advocate Wollemese's question. And I'm probably going to get fined a cow before saying this, but is he saying that he voted for legislation without knowing what he was voting for? Okay. But Chair, I think the issue was, and maybe somebody can tell us who's been around for some time, has there ever been even though the law provided for two deputies originally, were there ever any? And is Advocate Chai not the first deputy public protector? So I think it may be that when the learned people like Ms. Smuts and Mr. Landers and Advocate Wollemese came up with the Act originally, you thought that you'd have deputies to share the workload. And then probably it became apparent, well, isn't a deputy, and maybe you don't need two, so let's make it one. But I think the fundamental thing is, I think Advocate Chai is the first deputy. I think under those old provisions, there weren't any appointed.
Yeah.
And it may link to that, but I think it's a valid question.
So I think we should postpone this. Me never. I think we should maybe just reconsider these things again and maybe just reconvene one more time and have some discussions amongst ourselves privately and then come try and reach a decision. I think we're going to, we need to just do some more calculations and have a look at it. And I don't think we're going to agree today. Let's just have some more.
There's no urgency as far as I'm concerned. But of course, I'm in your hands. You know, you may say, no, let's decide now. I'm trying not to put unnecessary stress or pressure on us to come to a decision quickly, Mr. Jeffrey?
I don't have a problem with us not deciding, but obviously if we do decide for any increases, whether it be gratuity or anything else, we would need, I think, to get an input from Treasury. We obviously determine whether there is going to be an increase and how much, but we need to hear the practical detail of where it's going to come from. That is, if we go for it.
Do we do that after we...
No, because, Chair, we need a principled decision as to whether there's an increase. If we decide no increase,
yes,
then there's no point in hearing
it. There's no point in hearing it.
And I don't think we can base the some support for the gratuity. I don't really think it's correct for the gratuity to be determined by how much money there's possibly available. It's better to say, we want a gratuity, we're following these reasons for saying there's a gratuity, this is how much it should be, then we hear from Treasury whether it's doable, and if it's not doable, then we reduce it on that basis. But my fear is they come and say, well, there's lots of money, I don't think they will, there's lots of money, and then you can think, fine. But Chair, I don't have a problem with that, but can we, I would really appeal to members to look at the issue of, number one, if we agree on a salary increase, what is the basis? And is the 30% difference
between, and somebody please, I don't know if the office in the Deputy Speaker's office has looked at it, is my figure of roughly 30% difference correct? Have you checked it? You did. Okay. But, you know, is there... Yeah, it is about 30%. Same as Speaker, Deputy Speaker. So it's basically, number one, if we want a salary increase, reasons. And maybe people can throw out more reasons here. And is the one of the reasons, the main reason given was the 30% was too big a gap? Is it when you look at the Speaker and the Deputy Speaker? That's number one. Number two then is the issue of other issues, the car and the leave. And I... She gets... car allowance is part of her salary.
Yes.
And then she gets the SMS travel and subsistence rate. So it basically means, I think, if you've... You get restricted... I think Chair may be wrong, I don't know if anybody else knows, but I think you don't claim for the first X number of kilometres you drive, and then after that you can put in claims. But you get every kilometre you get a rate. It's similar to us as Parliament, I think. So we get fair amounts of money in compensation. So is there anything in that we want? Then number three, the gratuity of which there's some sympathy. Members have sort of expressed that I think the similar formula, there's this elaborate formula for the public protector, which I have no clue what it means. The formula is D over 7 times 2 times E plus 3 in brackets times F. And D is the basic salary per annum at the time of which her vacation of office was applicable. So you don't need to backdate it if we go for that because it's time of vacation of office. E is the period of years in service. And F is the calculation of income tax calculated at 40%. But anyway, that figure, according to Christine, comes to 5.45 million. If she gets the JP's salary level. But I think for me, first of all, is reasons for a gratuity. What's the rationale? And I think the arguments have been basically that, well, she doesn't get a pension. So she walks out with nothing, but the counter argument to that is that's what happens in any contract work. She could have contributed to a pension fund when she started, as most contract workers do that don't have provision for pension funds. So it's a question of weighing that up, and I would want to suggest there's that, and then obviously if there's any yeses to any of the questions, then it's backdating, or yeses to one and two, it's backdating. And then it's a question of if there's any increases, then it's the salary. I mean, then we've got to hear from Treasury. And then, Chair, I think we should also then consider that there should be a proper review done, but you can't de-link the terms and conditions of the public protector and the deputy, because the whole basis for this is what the public protector's getting. And then also, is it correct that the Chair of the Human Rights Commission is getting less than the deputy? It is different. It's a board. I mean, you've got the chair and you've got commissioners, whereas here you've got a public protector and a deputy. The gender commission is getting even less. I'm not sure what the commission with a long name, which Ms. Smuts is going to impress us by giving us the name without looking in her constitution. Okay, that I anyway, the commission with a long name, that's why. And the there's another one, isn't there?
Linguistics.
It's Commission for the Protection and Promotion of Cultural Linguistics and Religious Communities. And I think it's traditional there or not? No, okay. Auditor General, Chair, there is a review there is a special committee in terms of the statute. Which Advocate Masuta chairs. They did a review some time ago which hasn't been approved by the House.
Oh.
One of the things is, though, that the Auditor General generates a lot of money, and I think it's also looking at that industry, that sector of Auditors General. But I know they don't have the problem of money because the Auditor General charges departments, so they end up with like quite a big surplus. But anyway, that's not approved by the House. But we may want to say that we think there should be a review done very urgently, but it should not just be the deputy, it should be public protector and deputy, the chapter and other chapter 9s.
and maybe for good measure throw in what's the rest of that section in the Constitution. Inkasa, Pansalb, yeah.
All right. Honourable members, can we agree that for now we'll leave it there? You will confer and consult with one another informally. All right? You'll give me a signal as to when we can discuss this again. Yeah, smoke signal, tom-toms, or something like that. All right, I thank you for that. Honourable members, we have been remiss, and I take responsibility for that. For some time now, we had received a request from the Speaker's office to appoint someone to what is called the Equality Review Commission. Is it a committee? Oh, my apologies, thank you. And that person has to be a member of the National Assembly. I understand that within the ANC there's been some discussion on the matter. Are we in a position to look at that?
Mr. Chair, I mean, I actually think, I doubt that if anybody's been remiss, it's the ministry who ought to have appointed this thing. And I don't know whether there has been an incarnation of the committee, but the present one that stands to be appointed has been dragging on for many, many months. And I actually think that it's probably more important than it sounds, because the Equality Act, very problematic piece of law. It's, you know, if you think that this whole protection of state information thing has been a circus, you have no idea what. You weren't on the ad hoc that did the equality. It was my misfortune.
I don't think the protection of state information has been a circus, but go on.
Yeah, I'm not referring to its parliamentary members or proceedings at all. I mean the entire whole business. But the Equality Act is problematic in many respects, and it's very important that someone should keep track of what in fact is happening with even the evolution of the equality courts, which I tried to do some research, or I had people doing some research for me on that at one point. Very difficult to get past. Human Rights Commission is supposed to be doing it, but I think there probably is a real role for these people. So I think that it might be important to choose a good and apposite person with some real interest. I saw that letter. Ms. Schaefer and I have not discussed this, but would the Justice Committee has been asked to furnish a name, is that correct? And it goes directly to the Minister via the Speaker for his appointment. It's not a resolution of the House involved.
Not sure about that. I just want to get the Speaker off my back. I feel really uncomfortable when I keep getting...
And I think the way it's a really odd piece of work, the Equality Act, really. And it probably doesn't say. It probably is just in the hands of the Minister, and everybody's trying to be very correct. But will you give us a second, also a week or so, just to think? I'm sure Ms. Adams would also like to think. Who would be just the best MP, and irrespective of party lines, before we take a... committee vote.
You said a second. Did you say a week?
Look, I don't know. I mean, we have, as the ANC study group, the majority party discussed it and come up with a name of somebody who was also keen to do it, which I think is an important thing. And that was Ms. Shope Sitore, who's also a member of this committee.
You know, so maybe just, I'm not, I mean, it would be nice if, well, it's nice if all our decisions can be by unanimity. So if they want more time, I mean, if the opposition parties want more time, but that was our proposal.
You're implying that you're going to do it anyway.
But Mr. Swart...
No, well, let them think about it, and if they want to come up with a counter... No, not saying we're going to do it anyway. I mean, come up if you want to propose somebody.
Yeah, we would need to persuade
But then, Chair, I think it would be... Well, maybe then it's not possible to decide now. I mean, I don't think we really want to...
Don't do it immediately.
Ram
that's
something.
Why I led in with an argument about how problematic that law is.
Mm.
And that there probably is a real function for quality review commission.
I can, you know, we can, I'm sure as ANC we can relook at whether Ms. Smuts wants to volunteer. I know she's dying. Yes, that's the point.
No, in other general circumstances, I actually would. I actually care about that stuff. And what's in that law is really problematic. And in other circumstances, I would, but for various reasons which are not of any interest to anybody else, I don't.
Yes, Mr. Shaver.
We would like, as opposition, to have time to consider.
There are a number of sections in that act that have never come before.
I think
they're wonderful. You are on a committee.
What? Were you on a committee?
Yes.
And why
did it
come before?
The ANC in that committee thought it was creating a new economic order for this country. I mean, it was hair-raising. Every lefty in your party. And you know, in vain, Mohsin, Wally's brother, was in the chair. I mean, I had to go and bring him the Constitutional Court judgment to tell him how the court said you had to unpack the idea of unfair discrimination scheme. You weren't in it, were you? And thank God I won on that. So the one thing that's good in that act is how you deal with an unfair discrimination law. It was supposed to be the law giving effect to Section 9.4. The horizontal stuff as between persons. Dear God, they thought they were reinventing the economy of this country, creating a new economic order. It truly was hair-raising, and not until our previous justice minister came in about halfway through, and he said, "But what are you doing? This is supposed to be about Section 9.4. Where have you been? I've been trying to persuade them." And by then it was too late, so it's an all-encompassing
law. All right, all right. We need to appoint someone. Can we agree that we give the opposition some space and time?
Does it have to be a member of the
Senate? No. No, it says a member of the National Assembly.
Is the legitimate speaker asking?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
How long can
they want a week. They've requested a week. Mr. Sibonioni, all right? JJ?
Is there any criteria for the MP?
Well, I guess the person would have to have an interest in the matter, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, if he or she has a legal background, well, that's a bonus, and so on, you know.
Yeah, I presume the speaker gave it to us as... Yeah, I just wanted to raise the point that this issue of whether the committee should have raised it before you recognize.
Whether the committee did agree at a previous meeting to increase the deputy's salary.
Which previous meeting?
Well, that was the allegation which was then retracted, made by the public.
Oh, you mean in 2010?
Yes.
Well,
now we had made reference to PMG and finding the minutes, because we don't keep. There was no resolution of this committee. Definitely, I do understand that PMG have looked for that. I don't know if those minutes can be distributed. Those are unofficial minutes, but I'm just worried that in one of the media reports it became, although Ms. Schaefer in the meeting agreed that we hadn't decided.
No, we haven't.
But it came out in one of the media reports as the ANC saying that, and they just ignored the opposition because it was more newsworthy.
All right, I'm going to ask Mr. Romano has accessed PMG's report for that particular day. I've asked him to distribute it. He wants to say something. I'm going to allow him.
Maybe just to indicate that, you know, my own minutes which have not been, you know, adopted by the committee or brought before the committee do not reflect that agreement. And then the minutes that I was provided with by PMG today indicate that Mr. Jeffrey noted that the remuneration of the deputy was referred to the committee last year in June, and the committee should consider it as soon as possible. And then the chairperson suggested that the salary of the deputy could be considered in the following week. The chief financial officer should draw up a cost analysis, including big pay. That's all that is reflected. And even in my own minutes, like what I have is that the office should provide further information, and then the committee will take it from there.
This will be distributed to all of you. Okay. Honourable members, hopefully this is the last issue. Sorry.
Just complicate your life for you.
Okay.
What is the status of that PMG note?
It has no status.
Oh.
I think Mr. Jeffrey was just querying the fact that the media was saying that incorrectly, and the public protector had said that a decision had been taken on that day, which was refuted by some of you, but of course at the time we didn't have all this before us.
We're just concerned that in the future we might have someone wanting us to rely on the report of the PNG.
Well, it's just that if someone comes as the public protector did last week and makes a statement as she did, that we had made, in other words, adopted a resolution, that's a serious charge. And it's something we would need to think about. She said, you decided, and you're guilty of maladministration, which is what made everyone see red, and led to a lot of the comments that followed.
Maybe I know she retracted, but maybe you should write to her, just clarifying this, that we have checked both the notes that the secretary took and the PMB, and then it's also been PMG. What's PMB? Oh, Marit's been. sorry. and then also that it's been put. I mean, Mr. Swart was not present. Ms. Smuts was not present. So, and I think Ms. Adams was not present. So that again, in a more representative in terms of party meeting, nobody can recall such a decision. Or expression by being made by anybody.
All right, I want us to. Can we move off that item? We've received a letter from the Human Rights Commission. I haven't had time to make copies for your edification. Essentially, it comes from Deputy Chairperson Pregs Govender. She wants to host on Human Rights Day. How does she describe it?
We did receive copies.
Oh, you did?
Through the secretary.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
All right. We'll make sure you do. Sorry, Luzelle. It's to do with the access to sufficient water and adequate sanitation. And it's not my intention to go into that whole debate again. So, all right, wait. No, all right. She wants this report, it's a report of the commission, made public at a grand event on Human Rights Day. Present at this, which will take place hopefully in the old assembly chamber. Present will be certain ministers, the relevant ministers, Minister Collins Chabane, the Minister of Human Settlements, Minister of Water, etc., etc., etc. The difficulty is that because it's Human Rights Day, government may have other programs on the same day. And I am not sure in my mind whether the ministers she has in mind would be available. It's on the 15th of March, 2012, Honourable Members. No problem. It's her problem.
With respect, just take our view on this, because you are going into logistical possibility arguments which are not, in my view, appropriate.
All right, sorry.
She says in that letter that the citizens want a chance to hear what their government is doing for them. That has nothing to do with Parliament. As to Parliament, the role of the Human Rights Commission, and it already receives money for it, is precisely to go around, you know, having educational and information and other feedback meetings with the public. They are supposed to do that, they do it. As to Parliament, they are supposed to table their, especially their socioeconomic reports, in Parliament, and the relevant committees, it is always hoped, will have sessions with them, whether it is on health, water, laboratories, which is the Craig's speciality, or whatever. So the system is in place. All that is happening here is that, and the laboratories, of course, are a sensitive subject for all political parties. It's not a single political party that matters, that hasn't suffered the cruel fate of having ablutionary facilities in the felt over the last year. Okay. And some parties more than other parties. But, Chair, what I'm saying is, this is a commissioner, this happens to be her speciality, who used to be an MP, and she clearly thinks it's a nice idea to use the facilities of Parliament, and I'm regretfully saying that it's not appropriate. The Human Rights Commission must do what the Human Rights Commission does, interact with the public. If they want the people to hear what the government has to say, they can find a way of doing that. That has nothing to do with Parliament. They account to us, of course, and they, with us specifically, but they also interact with all relevant committees. I don't think it's appropriate for our facilities to be asked for or given for a big event featuring especially the executive and the Chapter 9 institution on a public holiday. So we don't think it's a good idea.
Mr. Jeffrey,
I don't have my copy of the letter in front of me, but I'm not sure what we were being asked for. I think it's not just for information, but
the commission therefore seeks your cooperation and assistance in ensuring the facilitation of its request for the use of a venue in Parliament for 15 March to host the parliamentary hearing to the relevant ministers and chairpersons of portfolio committees, other stakeholders. We've been asked to obtain the old assembly.
Yeah, but that request needs to go through the speaker.
Sure.
If you remember, I mean, Mr. Swartz keeps muttering Russell Tribunal in my ear. But the reason that the Russell Tribunal issue came here was because the speaker said no. And so it was then an issue of, well, if the speaker says no, can't this committee then say it wants to host the venue. Now, but in this case, we don't know what the speaker is. That request should be made to the speaker.
I think that's probably right.
And the chapter 9s are accountable to the National Assembly, so the speaker.
Yeah. But please note, the crucial point is
her representations to the speaker.
Report.
Thank you. I don't think it's our responsibility to get a venue.
No, absolutely.
Oh, you know what?
Well, I've been waiting.
Well, they're asking us to get the venue for them. All right. Are we okay with that, honourable members? So my response to them should be that they must direct their request to the Speaker's office.
Oh.
tough lot.
So, next week we'll have the public protector wanting to come and have their things here, and then we'll have, you know,
but
she doesn't. Yes, but that's when she's reporting to Parliament, not organising another function outside.
I suspect that's half the reason why this other attack tonight also wants this moment to be. Well, in the performance
of the system, all right. I hear you. That being the case, meeting is adjourned, and thank you very much.
Okay.